The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Centre Parks. Families that go here, grow here. The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Centre Parks. 400 acres of forest to explore right in the heart of Ireland.
Okay, so we're heading towards 9:29 this Wednesday morning, and lots of texts coming in about everything from cake to wagons to where else were we? We're going all over the place this morning, but we'll get there in a few minutes' time. But first, I want to introduce you. She just landed live in studio this morning, Janine Edgeworth. Good morning, Janine. Nice
morning.
To meet you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, thanks for sending us your book. So I think it takes some guts to self-publish a book. Not an easy thing to do, but you've got a great old yarn. So let's talk a little bit about you and tell us where you're from and how you and your family and what's happening in your life.
Yeah, well, I've got three children and I live in Coolock. I'm originally from Drimnagh and Tallaght, so I've been everywhere.
Yeah, okay.
And then I started writing years ago. I've always written books, children's books and adults' books. And then when you're like that, when you're self-published, it's hard to get yourself out there, and you're sending books in and you're hoping someone's having a good day or it clicks with someone, you know, that they will kind of believe in you. Then I just thought, you know, I'll have to do it myself. So I put the book out there, and to say I was nervous is an understatement, but
well,
I did
tell me about your kids. How old are the kids and what are their names? These are all the important questions in life.
Well, Daisy's 5. I hope I can remember them now.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it, when you're sitting here going, what?
Leighton's 12 and Liam is 14.
You see, wasn't that hard.
You got them all out there.
Okay, and when you were little, I want to talk a bit about you when you were little, because when somebody writes a lot, especially for kids' books, and then eventually you got your own book out, generally a lot of it comes from when you were very small and being interested in reading and writing. So did that happen from a young age for you?
Yes, I've always loved books like The Famous Five, Enid Blyton, Babysitter's Club, all of them. I've always read books.
Yeah.
I never thought writing was something I could do. I just didn't think you could be a writer.
Yeah.
I didn't think you could. I just thought you were kind of born, you know, a singer, or you're born it doesn't happen to normal people. So then I started tinkering away. I always enjoyed it in school, and my teacher was a huge support, my English teacher. She was fantastic.
Name her.
Irene Donegan.
Yeah, everyone needs a Miss Donegan. Mrs. Donegan in their lives.
Yeah.
And, you know, that
fantastic.
Teacher was...
She really, yeah. Really kind of pushed me and encouraged me, and I got a big bullet bus one day for one of the stories. I couldn't believe it. I was too nervous to read out, so my friend Louise had to do it for me, but it really encouraged me.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, maybe I'm okay, you know. And you know, being Irish, you're like, oh god, am I okay? So it just kind of grew from there, and then I got really serious about it maybe 10 years ago.
Isn't it amazing, Janine, that you can have the effect of a bula bus, as you call it? I haven't heard that for 100 years. But for,
it's only Irish, I know.
A suspiog is valid there somewhere. But that encouragement from a teacher.
It was huge.
You know, really it can guide you in a totally different direction to the one you might have been going in.
Yeah.
You know? Talk to me about your mum, will you?
So my mum, Helen, she passed away a week after my 7th birthday. She had cervical cancer. I thought it was leg cancer till I was like 20. I'm not even messing with
you. We'll go back to that. We'll come back to that.
It was all very taboo then.
You were very little.
Very little.
Yeah. How old was your mum?
She was 40.
Oh, God, help her. Okay.
Yeah, so it was... I mean, back then, it was... bereavement was different then, and grief for children was different. It wasn't something like there was... there was probably counselling services, but I didn't avail of any. It was kind of just more get up and get on with it. Not in a cruel way, but just in it was the way my dad knew, you know, and he was obviously grieving. I had a fantastic childhood, so it worked in a way.
You know, talking to Brian Cox, the actor on Friday Night on TV, he's 80 years old. He still remembers the day his father died and how he was plonked in front of the TV, he was saying. And that probably makes him, to this day, still watch TV. He associates it with that day to this day. You look at the Prince Harry story and how he was told his mother's dead. He was kind of given a pat on the back and told, you know, almost them's the breaks, you know. It was a very different, and you've just described yourself. I mean, you probably didn't go to, did you go to your mum's funeral? I don't know if
No.
Did you go to school soon after she died?
I think I went that day, actually. I think I was speaking to my auntie yesterday and she was saying, yeah, like we just brought you off to school, and someone on the yard said, how's Helen? And my auntie just said, yeah, no, she's grand. Because I didn't know, and my auntie was so traumatised that, you know, you just kind of, you got on with it. And I went to school, I'm almost certain it was on the same day. And it just, but it was... it was just what was done, and they just wanted you to be okay. And it's just,
yeah, I mean, there's no badness. Just, they didn't send you to school saying you must go to school even if you're upset. They're saying
I was a little wrecked. I had to probably get rid of her for today. No, it was more so just what they felt was right back then. There is no right or wrong when it comes to grief, childhood bereavement. No one knows what, you know, what the right route is.
That's
but
right.
Back then it really was, you just get up and you just get on with it.
Yeah. What did you, do you remember of your mum? Because you were so young. Do you have any flashes of memory?
That's exactly what it is, Ryan. It's just flashes.
Yeah.
It's little flashes of moments with her, say, in the Phoenix Park, or flashes. Anyone that's lost someone, you nearly look at photographs and you're trying to nearly kind of bring them to life as you're staying. You're like, do I remember that moment, or was that just a photograph? I remember her voice. She'd quite a kind of husky voice and a laugh, and my aunt has the exact same voice and laugh. I do remember that.
Are you becoming your mother, do you think? We often become our parents.
Yeah, like people would say they'd see similarities. And I mean, she was funny and she was kind, and you know, she was a good person. I don't think I could ever aspire to be that good.
What about books, words, education, and humour?
She loved reading. She's a huge reader. She also wrote, but more as a hobby, and reading was really her thing. She really enjoyed books.
Okay, so that can just permeate in, if it's in the house, you know, tends to follow through. I'm looking at this wonderful photograph here of, that's you and your mum.
Yeah.
You look like you might be about 2 or 3 or maybe 2.5 or something like that.
Yeah.
Now, this does not bode well because you're reading a book that's upside down.
That's the image of me upside down.
It's a book about the alpha. But I can see there's a lovely mother and daughter moment here.
That photograph was just, it's one of my most treasured possessions now. I actually only got it a few years ago, and I think my aunt gave it to me, but I was like, wow, it really...
You didn't know it existed before.
I didn't know it existed.
And again, like you say, somebody can reach into a drawer and pull a photograph that's been gathering dust and say, and give you something really, that was a very precious picture of that.
I was tempted to superimpose a better book to it than the ABC upside down, you know, something a bit more poignant, but it is as it is. Yeah, it's a gorgeous photograph, and I really... I love looking at it. It makes me happy when I look at it. Whereas for a long time, looking at pictures of my mom would have kind of made me feel sad.
Yeah, of course.
This one makes me feel happy.
Now, that's a lovely thing to have. And when you're trying to navigate grief at that age, 8, 9, 10, 11, what do you do? Because it can manifest itself in so many different ways. It could be a headache or a knot in your tummy, or, you know, it could be a breakout in terms of personality or temperament. How did you, do you think, respond physiologically or to
I think it was more physical when I was younger. It was tummy pains, trips to the doctor, things like that straight after, kind of in the year after. It was more physical things, you know, and then my dad would obviously panic and bring me to doctor with any little kind of thing I was saying.
Let's hold the horses here for a sec, because I think tummy pains, that is almost a form of heartache. You know, when you're cramped and you're just because you're in pain, your body is in pain, especially when you're young, and you can't explain it. And you can go to 10,000 doctors, and they'll say, "You're just hurting."
Exactly.
Essentially. So what did the doctor say to you when you went with your stomach pain?
I can't remember the exact conversations of what it was, but I just remember it was the trips to the doctor soon after. It was tummy pains, which still I would, if I'm ever kind of, we all get a bit anxious now and again, and it would be my, you know, you'd feel your tummy.
Yeah, not your stomach.
But it was more physical things. Then it kind of went into a fear of something happening to my dad, which is when I was writing my book, I realised that's a huge thing I never realised.
Tell me about that.
I was just terrified something would happen to him.
Okay.
You know, now he's at home with the flu today, and I told him, take 2 paracetamol, your grand. So I've obviously gotten over that. But it's like, it's a big day with Ryan, Dad, your grand.
I apologise to your dad, by the way, for dragging you away.
Don't even think he can listen. God love him. I'll have to play it back later.
Go on.
So it was just a profound... He was a chef, and he worked, you know, back then he'd done the night jobs.
Crazy hours.
Mm. And I would be like terrified, lying in bed, terrified something would happen to him.
Yeah.
You know, and then my dad remarried, and I had a stepmom, and I had a great childhood. You know, they were both very supportive, and it was a lovely upbringing, which worked as a good band-aid. But like grief, it bites you.
It does.
And it hits you when you don't expect it.
And it follows you around like a bad smell sometimes.
It really does. It's a gift that keeps on giving. It comes at you. Yeah.
Do you have anything of your mum's that you can look at and keep?
Do you know what? That was always things. We mightn't have had much talk over the years, but I always had things. So I remember my dad and my stepmom, I did, you know, were conscious to give me things. So I had like my mum's ring and I had a jewellery box and stuff like that. And only now I'm realising I got quite obsessed with them. So I'd be afraid not to wear the ring. The photograph had to be beside the bed. It was like that was my connection to her, even though I couldn't speak about it too much. It was more the things. And I remember actually with bereavement and when you lose someone young, in my experience, it's people pointing stuff out to you that you didn't even realise. So someone would say to me, I remember my aunt saying to me, you might not always need to wear your mum's ring. And I was like, what? And I get what she means now because I don't have it on me today.
Yeah.
It's like as if when the more you're healing, the less the things are such a...
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it. And so you're not almost obsessing.
Obsessing, yeah.
You can replace obsession with, mistake it for emotional attachment.
Yes, definitely.
Whereas
actually
there's something, is my dad going to die? Is the ring going to get lost? You know, all these things. Whereas actually you have to, don't you? Just
And you never connected it. Like I never talked to myself. It sounds, I feel silly saying it now,
but it's the
truth. I didn't think, oh, I'm really fearful over my dad because of my mum. It didn't even link.
Yeah.
Or obsessing over my mum's jewellery and stuff. The ring, it didn't link to me.
You seem very grounded now. Like you're almost laughing at it. I get the sense you've got a great sense of humour.
Yeah, well,
who do you read? Who do you like to read?
I love Roddy Doyle.
There
I love Marion Keyes.
Yes, I love them all.
Cecilia Hearn and then obviously Claire Keegan. I would read anything really.
Do you know what? Just while we're here, I read Claire Keegan's book last week.
Oh, it's,
Small things like this. Whew, I mean, it doesn't take a long time to read because it's short, but it's... Yeah. It's very powerful little piece of literature, isn't it?
I've read and reread Foster. I don't know how many times.
I haven't read that yet. Oh, that's on Colleen Kuhn, isn't it? That's what it's based. Yeah,
it's unbelievable.
Is it really?
You know, I always go back to books. I kind of get a bit upset. I've got an obsession with books now, where I reread. I keep rereading.
What do you love? Who do you? I mean, what would you be your?
Paula Spencer, Roddy Doyle. I absolutely loved that. I loved Eleanor Oliphant, it's completely fine. And Foster, Crazy as Chocolate was a book I picked up randomly one day. Catherine Hyde, fantastic book about a woman whose mum committed suicide and she's approaching the age her mum was.
What's that called?
Crazy as Chocolate.
Crazy as Chocolate.
Yeah, the title doesn't do it justice.
No, but it sounds like an intriguing book.
It's fantastic. I've read and reread. So I always come back to books.
Yeah. The books are great friends, aren't they?
Oh, they really are.
They give you no grief, no fighting with them and no answering back. And you don't have to, you know, text them or email them. You just pick them up
and
enjoy the words. Are you a library person or a bookshop
person?
I
love the library.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really love the library. There's something when you go into a library, it's just, it's a real comfort. I was actually only in there yesterday, the day before. But yeah, it's...
Where's your local library?
Coolock Library.
And is it a good library?
Yeah, it's
I mean, they're all great libraries, but
yeah, they actually renovated it. It's really nice, and the kids love it. Well, my youngest Daisy loves going into the library.
Again, that's great. So you're passing the gift on to the next generation.
And my middle son is all Harry Potter, you know, he's
great.
He loves Harry Potter. And the oldest guy is actually, he dips in and out of reading as well.
Well, as they get older, you can lose them to books for a little while, but once they've got it at a young age, they'll come back, boomerang back at another point. You decided to write this story, the thing about feathers, which is, it's your third adult fiction book, but you're very hard on yourself about your previous writing.
Literature are brutal, Ryan, let's be honest.
Brutal.
Brutal.
You should put that as a quote on the back of both of them.
Yeah.
Brutal, says me, the author.
Yeah.
But anyway, what is it about the thing about feathers that you believe is the game changer for you?
It's a book that I'm writing through my own experience, but I'm not the character Sammy. I wanted to write a book on grief in a relatable way and humorous and the awkwardness around it, especially in Ireland and the taboo around grief and death, and we don't like to talk about it. And even like my character Sammy, I found it fascinating how all in this day and age, it's all about manifesting and living the life of your dreams and you create your life. She was doing all this and her husband dropped dead. I found it fascinating how you kind of get over the loss of control.
But I manifested
I didn't
life
manifest
together
them
forever.
To drop dead, you know. So that's how I found that fascinating.
Maybe somebody else did who
Maybe
didn't like
did,
him.
Yeah.
Anyway, but...
It was that kind of side of it, you know, kind of being lighthearted around it. But then just how she navigated grief and... I just wanted it to be relatable. I wanted it to be something that someone can enjoy and entertain as well. I mean, life is serious enough. It is a humorous book as well.
And that's great. I mean, a comedy about death has to be, you know, something that it's also kind of deliciously dark and can be.
It definitely helps when you have a laugh.
There's no doubt. I think there's two conversations that happen around death. There's one where it's the real solemn, you know, with the family, and I'm sorry, it was in the back of the church. And there's a, and then there's the other, which is, you know, at the backstage chat going, I'm going to get there late. I'm going to get in the back, shake the law, get out of there.
Yeah.
I couldn't bear going to the, I think I'll hit the removal. It's quicker, you know, and you have all these conversations that are kind of comical in a dark yeah. fashion, but that's what you're tapping into there.
And people are usually waiting for, is it the eulogy? You know, like when people are, when it's someone going up to talk about the person, that's usually, you know, there's always usually a, usually a bit of a laugh in there or a story, you
that's
know,
right.
and it connects everyone together.
You wrote it during lockdown, which we won't talk about because it gives me
the
heebie-jeebies.
Well, I actually wrote it before lockdown. It took me about 4 or 5 years. I'm a very slow writer.
No, that's okay.
There's
no
grammar.
There are no rules in writing, I think.
Yeah,
in
so it was then I self-published it. I thought, you know what, I'm just going to do it now or never. So I did it, and then I would wake up every morning for about a week after going, did I actually just put that out? Oh my God, I'm scarlet. But it's got great feedback, and I'm happy with that.
It takes huge courage to
huge
do
courage.
What you did.
Yeah.
So well done. I'm really happy for you. I noticed that you called the book is called The Thing About Feathers, but your husband can't get his head around that.
Oh, Jesus, yeah.
Tell me.
The Thing About Fellas, he thought it was called.
Why did he think that?
Why would you take... It's actually got a bit of confusion. You know, someone else thought it was A Thing About Fathers. I thought, my poor dad, now imagine writing a book on him.
They're all projecting their worries of their own life on you
and
know?
And then the kids, like my son, with The Thing About... Is your next book going to be The Thing About Tables? Like, they just thought it was
She's
just
getting great
ridiculous.
Support at home, aren't you?
Oh, do you know what? Tough skin, Ryan.
You need it.
The title kind of caused a bit of confusion, The Thing About Fellas. I was like, how does that even make sense to you?
It's not a bad title for a book at some point, The Thing About Fellas.
I'm going to copyright that now.
I
don't even
should.
Think about it.
You should. But the Irish Writers' Centre were of use to. They were
fantastic. And Inkwell and Vanessa Fox O'Loughlin, all of them have supported me over the years. I've gone to courses. And as everyone says, you have to write, you know, writing every day. And I find Irish authors are a great support. When you're even interviews, like I would look up to Sinead Moriarty and Sheila Flanagan, anyone you write, Katy Kelly, you know, they're so supportive.
Well, I've interviewed everyone you've mentioned there, and they're all very, very, very pleasant, lovely people
so
and talented
nice.
People. Yeah. But more importantly for people like you, I think, is that they're welcoming. You know, they don't pull
they
up the
really
ladder
are.
And say, well, good luck to you.
And even if you send out an email to them or anything, they reply and they encourage.
Oh,
and
that's lovely to hear
it's
that.
It's great,
That's really, because, you know, the world's so full of nastiness. It's great to hear that.
And writing is so lonely. Like it is when you're sitting there yourself, you feel like you're the only one in the world and that's doing it, you know.
There's lots of writers centre, you know, these writers retreats. I think they all sound lovely places to go for a week and, you know, pretend you're writing the next masterpiece.
Exactly, yeah.
Declan in Dublin says, I lost my dad at 7. He was 7 years old when his dad died in 1976, and I was also sheltered from the experience. To this day, I find it very difficult to talk about him without getting emotional. I lost my mum when I was 40, and I only remember her with a big smile. But you did say that, Janine, earlier on, like that, and I was referring to both Brian Cox and Prince Harry. And Harry's in the 90s when his mother died.
Yeah.
So I think it's a relatively new thing where we're very inclusive with the children. Everything largely is discussed and there's no fear of it, I mean, necessarily. But there's still a bit of taboo around when somebody's recently bereaved. I don't think we know how to handle them, especially in the shop.
And I think you're afraid to make it worse.
Yeah,
I think it's
like,
what if I'm opening up a can of worms here and I didn't even think of that and I'm there? You know, I think it's my dad, I think, was afraid to probably make me worse and just kind of keep it all nice and calm. There she is playing. She's grand. So there was no, it was more of an ignorance. And I mean, as I said to you, it worked well for me. I had a great childhood. It all went swimmingly.
Yeah,
like, it was fine. But it does, you know, you do need to deal with it at some stage, I feel, when you're a child. Because when I had my own children, then it really came back and bit me.
Go on, explain that.
Well, after my first son, I was, I feared my own mortality. I was irrational thinking about something might happen to him. I missed my mom, you know, and you feel silly. I still feel silly even saying that.
Why would you feel silly about something you feel?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You're entitled to that
feeling. I know.
So don't worry about silliness.
Yeah, you feel really like, oh, that's, you know, such a long time ago. And, you know, shouldn't you have a great life? You know, but now I realise that there's an emptiness there that you just have to kind of live with. I'll always carry the grief.
That's exactly.
But it doesn't, you know, it doesn't have to define me as such. But my mum will always be someone that I will miss, and it doesn't go away.
No, it doesn't. And you will always have the photograph of you reading the book
upside down
as a reminder to how disappointing you were to your mother from a young age. She's there in heaven
going, I can read now, Mum.
No, it's too late. When I was there, it was upside down. You're not used to me now.
No, you can chew it and everything. Chew marks on the side of that.
Well, you were very little. Listen, a lot of books are made for chewing, as you know. That's part of it. Anyway, Tony Morgan was on to say, listening to you chatting with Janine this morning, my father died when I was 5 years old. I have vivid memories, falling off the table, daddy picking me up and giving me sixpence, me with the assistance of my cousin and next door neighbour Dora, breaking every pane of glass in my father's beloved glass house. Crikey. Treasured memories all the same. Seamus Morgan, he died 55 years ago today. Nice to remember him today. Missed and loved by his 7 children. But he's down a glass house, obviously. Another says... listening to that lovely lady, that'll be Janine Edwards, our guest this morning, talking about losing her mum and being afraid that something might happen to her dad, it rings a bell with me. I'm 52 years old. My dad died in 1999. He was only 55. My mum is almost 80 and has an autoimmune condition. Since COVID happened, I've been so concerned about her catching COVID. So listening to your guest chatting, I'm thinking that this is it's quite possible that my anxiety over my mum getting sick probably stems from losing my dad. And although it's over 20 years ago, those feelings are still so raw. So thank you for helping me think about this today. Oh, well done. Yeah, I mean, you're helping people along the way. I'm reading a very interesting non-fiction book. It's called The Body Keeps the Score, says Teresa. It's by Bessel van der Kolk. How about that for a name? Wow. Anyway, how our body holds our traumas, and the science. I feel like an old woman with aches and pains since my dad died. So reflecting on the body and grief, just a side note, Bernardo's charity does great work with grieving children. So that's two things covered there. In relation to looking like your parents, do you look like your mother or your father or both?
I actually kind of, I have to colour enough my dad, but I do look like my mom, actually, yeah.
You got a twofer there. Okay. In relation to looking like your parent, my father died, says Sarah, when I was 10. As I was growing up, everyone who knew both of us always said I was the image of him, which gave me a lovely feeling. So roll on many years, at my mother's wake in 2018, every one of my mother's and friends who hadn't seen me in a long time took a second look from across the room and gushed, I thought you were your mother. So yes, I've turned into my mother. It was lovely and gave us all a laugh. So that's what part of it is. The book you've been talking to us about is called The Thing About Feathers. And it's where can people buy it or get it?
It's on Amazon. So
The Thing About Feathers by Janine Edwards on Amazon. And yeah, we'll put a link on our webpage too.
Thank you.
What's
so
the
much.
Dream? I mean, you're a young person still. You've got a lovely family and three. Let's say this is the first major book out. What would you like to see happen next?
I would just love people to read the book and enjoy the book, relate to it, and just to continue writing. That's all I want to do, is just continue writing, and my children's books as well.
And a publisher, would you like to go with?
Yeah, like it used to be a huge deal to me. I would be thinking, oh, I need to get a publisher. But, you know, it's not the be all and end all. It's very hard for self-published authors in Ireland. Sometimes you can kind of feel like you're not part of the loop. It's hard to get in there. And like that, as I said, you're hoping someone will connect with your book on the day that you send it into them. You know, so I'm happy just for people to read the book and enjoy it.
And for
one person to say, you know, I really like that character, or it made me laugh. That's.
I think you've got a very bright future in this world ahead of you. You've got what it takes. I believe. Your chat with Janine, says Fiona, is a very honest conversation about grief and how to be in it. It's messy. We don't have words or education about one of life's inevitable chapters for us all. It's complex, and maybe because it's so final in the physical sense of connection that we're awkward around acknowledging that. So let's hope this generation continues to speak about this. It was a lovely interview. Well, let's leave it at that, Janine. It was a lovely interview. I loved your time this morning. It's really nice to meet you. You have a real job as well as the writing, don't you?
A real job, yeah. I'm a dental nurse in the HSC.
Well, they're lucky to have you. That's the truth.
Oh, thanks. They're lovely. What a pleasure. They're really supportive.
I'm glad to hear it. And it's really nice to meet you. My best to your kids and to your husband and to your dad. And the rest of your family,
better.
If he's feeling better, two Panadol and a pat on the head from Janine this morning.
Grand.
You'll be grand. I'm going in to meet the odd fella.
you
mind
so
yourself.
Much
congratulations. Janine Edwards is the author of The Thing About Feathers. Delightful guest this morning. It's 9 minutes to 10.